Blog Talk Radio.
So I'm gon' grab you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You a fake, so I'm gon' grab you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. God, please protect me if it's
son of a bitch. Wow. Man. I missed you motherfuckers. I've been itching for a few days to get back, because I miss a lot, man. When you're gone just a week and so much stuff happens that it's almost impossible to keep up. But I am over-prepared for today's show, unsurprisingly. And I'm excited. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. It's an endless list of stuff to talk about. There's good news, there's bad news, there's in-between news. As soon as I went away, Hillary Clinton was like, shit, Kyle Kalinske from Secular Talk is off for a week, so let's go back out there in the public eye and start saying stupid shit. Maybe he'll miss it. Let's go. No, I didn't miss it. I got all of it. The Obamacare repeal. Oh, my God, back from the dead again. This is like back from the dead number 9,312. We also have technological problems because we've been off for a week, so naturally the entire show doesn't even know how to run properly anymore. So let's jump right into it. I can't even tease you with these stories because I think I got 12 of them for today, and there's no way I'm getting to 12, so Here we go, y'all. Obamacare repeal. You probably haven't heard much about it because the mainstream media is doing such a shitty job covering it, or not covering it, I should say. The Obamacare repeal zombie is back from the dead for, what is this, the third time, fourth time, fifth time, something like that. So this one is called the Graham-Cassidy-Heller Obamacare repeal bill. Now, let me go ahead and give you a simple summary. This is from the Centers for Budget and Policy, and it's CBO prior estimates. In other words, they haven't done their in-depth analysis yet, but they've done enough to give us these facts. So here's what would happen if this were to pass. An estimated 32 million people will lose coverage within 10 years. That's not officially scored yet, but that's the estimate. 32 million would lose coverage within 10 years. It ends the Medicaid expansion, healthcare for 11 million low-income adults, ends all subsidies for the exchange, replaced by a smaller and declining block grant. So this is redistribution from the poor and the middle class to the rich, also known as the only thing that Republicans know how to do. The block grant doesn't have to be spent on the same population. So again, redistribution to the rich. Cuts coverage for low-income seniors, children, and people with disabilities by 7% by 2026 with a per capita cap, ends federal protections on pre-existing conditions. Wow, look at that. Lifetime caps and essential benefits. 50% of states expected to do so. So in other words, it makes the protection for pre-existing conditions optional by state. And about half the states, because they're the red states, would say, yeah, in our state, we don't have protection for pre-existing conditions. We have ends all cost-sharing payments to low-income Americans, ends all funding for coverage by 2026, cuts $250 billion between now and 2026, average state cut of 17% through 2026, 100% afterwards. Averages would be dramatically different. 20 states estimates to lose 35 to 60% of funding to move money to rural red states. CBO has not estimated impact on premiums, but likely 20% spike by next year. Holy shit. Would likely be presented to the House as take it or leave it if it passes the Senate, which might be the only saving grace in this bill, provides no funding for recessions, natural disasters, public health emergencies, or price spikes, targets women's health and family planning, so gutting Planned Parenthood, of course, uses the same 50 votes, only partisan technique to pass, upends all bipartisan progress of the last 2 weeks, so all the deals that Trump actually cut with the Democrats would be overridden by this. So, yeah, yet again, it's horrendous. I'm always amazed by when Republicans propose these healthcare reforms, they have nothing to propose because the Democrats already did their idea. That's what Obamacare is. It's a piece of legislation that was originally proposed, or a version of it was proposed by Richard Nixon and then Bob Dole, and Mitt Romney implemented it in Massachusetts, and the Heritage Foundation, which is a right-wing think tank, wrote policy papers on it and said, this is our answer to single payer. Because it's an individual mandate-style system. So you say you have to buy private insurance, and then there's also a Medicaid expansion aspect of it. So the Democrats did the Republican idea. They implemented it into law. By the way, they got zero Republican votes. But they did the Republican idea, so now the Republicans have nowhere to go. What are they going to do? They're like, I don't know, let's take a sledgehammer and swing it at everybody's face. And that's what every piece of legislation they propose on healthcare, that's what it is. Guys, Trump Care had a 17% approval rating. So they propose a healthcare reform that makes everything worse. More people are uninsured. The prices shoot up. You have redistribution from the middle class and the poor to the rich. So it's not like they act like it's impossible to crunch the numbers and get facts and data on their bills. But when we do that, we find out very quickly, oh, this is nothing but a giant giveaway to the rich and to the private health insurance companies and big pharma. That's all it is. Now, the Democrats are bad enough, again, because they did their old Republican proposal. So they're already serving the health insurance companies. But the Republicans take it to a comical point where you can't even spin it to say, oh, this is good for people. There's no way to even theoretically spin this. The only argument they make to their constituents is, yeah, we're repealing Obamacare. As if it's, wow, oh, wow, how bold you are. You're such heroes for regular people. That's become a fucking meme on the right. Or is it, we got to repeal Obamacare. And then what? We got to repeal Obamacare. It's not like if you repeal Obamacare, a magic wand is waved and then everything is great. No, the system before Obamacare was so abysmal that it merited any kind of reform, even a shitty reform. But now they say, no, if we get rid of Obamacare, everything will be perfect. Then why wasn't everything perfect before Obamacare? Why was everything a mess before Obamacare? You had more people uninsured and prices were higher. They go, no, let's go back to that system. They have no ideas, man. They have no real ideas. I've made this point a million times, but go talk to somebody on the far right and ask them, hey, what's your ideal plan? If you ask somebody on the so-called far left, which is just people who are right in the United States, hey, what's your idea on healthcare? They say, single-payer Medicare for all. You get an answer like that. And they say that. They'll give you reasons. They'll say, hey, look, every other modern nation has one version or another of a single-payer system. They pay less money. They get better outcomes. It just destroys us when you look at the objective studies that have been done on this issue. So they have well-thought-out proposals. Ask the far right, hey, what's your ideal proposal? Yeah, repeal Obamacare. No, I said, what's your ideal? I know what you're not for. What are you for? Ooh, gotta get rid of the lines around the states. As if that would fix all of our problems. You know what happens when you get rid of the lines around the states and you make it so that health insurance companies can go wherever they want and people can purchase across state lines? All that's going to happen is all the health insurance companies are going to set up headquarters in the state that taxes them the least. So that's nothing but a ruse to give health insurance companies, more money. That's all that is. hey, let's give health insurance companies more money by letting them save more money on taxes. So that's their first idea, get rid of the lines around the states. That doesn't do anything that's going to help the people. That's just to help the corporations. And then if you push them far enough, what do they say? Free market. That's my idea, free market. But we had a free we still have a free market system. It's just been tweaked under Obamacare. But we had an even bigger free market pre-Obamacare, and that was the system that was so bad that it needed reform immediately. So your ideal system is to go back to the system pre-Obamacare, which was worse. Your solution is to go back to more of the problem. So they have no fucking ideas.
It's just, we got to get rid of Obamacare.
And now Lindsey Graham has rehabilitated this horrific idea, and his provisions are a joke. And by the way, they're like one or two votes short of passing in the Senate.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. And by the way, mainstream media, not covering it. They're so bad that I can't even put into words how bad they are. Like, you have one fucking job to give facts and information and look out for the American people. That's not that difficult. You know, keep your eye on the ball. They can't. They can't. They're too busy talking about 9,000 other menial nonsense things. Sean Spicer was at the Emmys last night. They're like, Sean Spicer's at the Emmys! Talk about fucking healthcare! Oh my God! Talk about healthcare! People are on the verge of losing their healthcare, and you're
like red balloon.
So that's where we are in America today. Mainstream media is not talking about it. They're one or two votes short. The only saving grace is that they're saying it'd be take it or leave it with the House of Representatives. And even if it were to get through the Senate, it's doubtful it'd get through the House because there's enough super-duper ultra-far-right Republicans in the so-called Freedom Caucus, hilariously named Freedom Caucus, who would say, no, it's not dumb enough. Make it dumber. So, you guys have no idea how many times the dumbest of the dumb politicians in the country have actually saved us. And what I mean by that is, like, for example, establishment Republicans and Obama, back when he was president, they cut a deal, a grand bargain, to cut Social Security and Medicaid. And you know who saved us? The Tea Partiers. So they're like, no, we want more cuts, so we're going to vote against this. Yeah. So there wasn't any cuts to it because the dumbest politicians in the country said, we want more, we're going to hold out for more, so we got nothing. Well, there's another situation where the dumbest people in the country might save us. If it gets past the Senate, which is still a question mark, we might be relying on the Tea Partiers to say, no, I want a clean repeal of Obamacare. I want to get rid of every single provision, and then I want to replace it by somebody shooting Americans in the face with a sniper. Yeah. Okay. We're back, baby. We're back. All right. So that's what's happening with Obamacare. Oh, shit. Next. Oh, I think I got a bunch of videos today because, again, we've been backed up, but a lot of these are just classics that I couldn't. These are old, but I had to throw them in today. So there's been no live show for a week, and I've got a lot of catching up to do, and there's some stuff that happened a while ago that I feel compelled to talk about because I just can't get past it. Fox and Friends spoke about the 9/11 memorial in the wake of the anniversary, which was recently, and they couldn't help themselves but politicize the issue with the dumbest point imaginable. Check this out.
Mr. Secretary, you and the Vice President will be there today. What can we expect? What are you going to be doing there?
Well, today is really a memorial for the 40 passengers. We're gonna talk to the families. They were here. We were here yesterday, dedicating a chime with 40 chimes, design of it, shovel, groundbreaking for that portion of the monument. clearly are reflecting on how great this country is, the sacrifices we've made, and also talking about the change that 9/11 brought to all Americans.
Do you worry 100 years from now someone's going to try to take that memorial down like they're trying to remake our memorials today?
Brian Kilmeade. Brian Kilmeade. He is a special kind of stupid, isn't he? I mean, he should really wear a dunce hat as he sits on that Fox and Friends couch. He just compared a 9/11 memorial to Confederate statues. There's a pretty big difference between those two things. The 9/11 memorial is to the victims! The victims! Whereas the Confederate monuments are to the perpetrators. They're not Confederate monuments of the slaves who were tortured and raped and beaten and had their family separated and lived miserable lives because they were chattel, they were property of the slave owners. The Confederate monuments are to the perpetrators. The 9/11 monument is to the victims. If we had a statue of Osama bin Laden up, yeah, I'd hope we'd fucking pull it down. I would hope that that wouldn't be a statue that stands very long. No, you know what? They know that, though. They fucking know that. They're not that dumb. They can't possibly be that dumb. But they don't care. They're playing for a team. That's the whole point of Fox and Friends. We're red team. We're Republicans. And, like, the Republicans in the South are for keeping these statues up, so that's what we're for. So all the logic is irrelevant. Forget the logic. I'm playing for a team here, and let me make this ridiculously stupid point. And also, guys, you know, I spoke about this once. I should probably talk about it more in the context of discussing this issue, but I didn't know this, but the Confederate statues were put up in two eras. It wasn't directly after the Civil War. It was not. In fact, Robert E. Lee himself was like, don't put up statues to the Confederates. Don't put them up of me, because that's not a good idea. So even he was against it. But it wasn't put up directly after the Civil War. It was put up, number one, during the Jim Crow era. The whole point was to say, hey, black people, get the fuck in line. We still run the show around here. You don't believe me? Look at that statue over there of the people who fought to keep you enslaved. So a bunch of them were put up during the Jim Crow era. And then the other time they were put up, Civil Rights era. So they were put up specifically as a symbol of segregation and oppression of black people and second-class citizenship to say, hey, fall in line. I see all you, you know, uppity N-words are running around here trying to get equality, but if you get equality, that takes away our right to keep you a second-class citizen. So here, let me remind you again of your place in society. Isn't it nice to walk down the street with your, you know, 4-year-old, 5-year-old kid and see a statue of a Confederate general, which represents your oppression? So people today, they have all these, you know, cutesy little arguments to try to spin the reality and say, no, it doesn't mean what it quite obviously means, the Confederate statues. It's just to remind us of history. Yeah. Right, which is why... What, is it a good idea to keep up statues of Stalin in Russia? Are those same people who would argue to keep up Confederate statues, are they in favor of keeping up Stalin statues in Russia? Are they in favor of keeping up statues of Goebbels and Himmlers and Hitler in Germany? Well, it's just learning from our history. That's all we're doing. We're saying never again. Really? You say never again by putting up the statue of the fucking perpetrators? Pretty sure you do that by putting up statues of the victims. But on Fox News, logic is irrelevant because they're playing for a team. They know what their team believes. So they just make a preposterous conflation of a statue to the victims of 9/11 and a statue to the perpetrators of the Confederacy. Look, man, if you're one of those people who says, no, I really think we should keep them up, fine. But at least make a cogent argument in favor of it. Like, if you want to have that opinion, fine. But don't obfuscate. Like, this is obfuscation. Let me muddy the waters, make a point that makes no sense, to try to dupe rubes into saying, yeah, that's why we should keep them up, because it's just like the 9/11 memorial. No, it's not. So if you're on that team, hey, let's keep up the Confederate statues, fine. But make an argument that is logically coherent and not the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard. And with Brian Kilmeade and Fox and Friends, naturally, they don't give a shit about logic and rationality. They're just there to play for a team and be the biggest partisan douchebags imaginable. Okay. All right, now we get to some Hillary stuff. So since the election is over, Hillary Clinton's been doing some interviews here and there, you know, usually discussing more the personal side of stuff than the policy side of stuff. Well, she sat down with Vox for an interview, and we have a little clip here that they released. They actually released this before the full interview was released, but this generated quite a bit of noise on the internet for obvious reasons. So let's watch, and then we'll come back and discuss.
If you're running a raucous, pluralistic, diverse democracy where there are literally millions of different voices, you are going to hear from all kinds of voices. You know, I was a senator for 8 years. I bet the vast majority of people who came through the doors of my Senate office to talk to me, to advocate, whatever they were doing, were not political donors, or certainly not political donors to me. They were constituents. They were citizens. They had something to say. And so part of what we've shrunk the political process to such a narrow set of questions. And that's in the interest of both the far right and the far left, both of whom want to blow up the system and undermine it and all the rest of the stuff they talk about. I think we operate better when we're kind of between center right and center left, because that's where, at least up until recently, maybe it's changed now, until recently, that's where most Americans were.
It's incredible. She acts like cameras don't exist and we don't have a record of the things that she says. Do you remember during the primary when she argued tooth and nail and scolded Bernie Sanders for insisting, oh, you know, you're a centrist? As I'm saying it, you've said it. You know, you've argued. There was an old quote of she's in a room with a bunch of centrists, and she goes, some people accuse me of being a centrist. I say, guilty. But no, during the primary, all of a sudden, Chameleon Hillary comes out. She's trying to pander to the proper group of people given the context. She's like, no, I'm a progressive. I'm a strong progressive. Bernie's like, no, you said you're a centrist. She's like, no, how dare you malign me and besmirch my integrity and my honor. Are you saying I'm a liar? No, I'm a progressive. Well, now the election's over. She's like, cameras? Record of what I've said? Forget that. Now I'm going to say something totally different because I'm Hillary Clinton and I don't think facts matter or my history matters. And now, oh yeah, you know, we operate best when we're between center right and center left. What happened? What happened? You thought that was the biggest offense in the world when Bernie said that exact same thing during the primary, but now the truth comes out because it's after the election. Ugh. Now, furthermore, what's the problem with that line of thinking? Hoo-hoo, here I am, a centrist. That argument that she made is, it's an argument that stupid people think is smart. That's what that argument is. Every time I hear that, I'm reminded of, like, you know, sitting at the dinner table for a family gathering, and the person who reads nothing about politics, doesn't know anything about the policy, isn't up to date with news and information, chimes in when there's some sort of political discussion going on and says something like, you know, I feel we operate best when we're in between the right and the left. Why can't we all just be centrist? Because it's such a lazy point. And it assumes that, well, if you just split the difference, everything is great. But hold on, what if the spectrum in the U.S., or the Overton window, is way off to the far right? Well, if you split the difference between right-wing and super far right wing, then the middle between those two points is far right wing. And that's what we have in the United States of America. We have one party, which is the Democratic Party, which is a center-right party, which, you know, passes legislation all the time, pushes legislation all the time that's great for big pharma, that's great for health insurance companies, that's great for Wall Street and other multinational corporate donors and wealthy donors. Now, every now and then, the Democrats throw you a bone on social issues. Wow, you don't totally hate gays and black people. Oh, my, so impressive you are. That's the Democratic Party. And then the Republican Party sells out even more to corporations, and then they're also totally backwards on all the social issues. And, you know, they're, as Bill Maher said years ago from a New Rule segment, they're flat earthers and Civil War reenactors and, you know, people who don't believe in science. So you have one party that's right-wing and the other party that's far, far right-wing, and then you split the difference and there's Hillary Clinton in the far right-wing, acting like, what? No, I'm just a reasonable centrist. That's all I am. Well, think about her record. If she thinks she's a reasonable centrist, then apparently reasonable centrism means passing the Patriot Act, which gets rid of your constitutional rights. No more protection from unreasonable search and seizure. No more due process. You can hold people extrajudicially. That's Hillary Clinton centrism, getting rid of your constitutional rights. Hillary centrism is outsourcing your job. Her centrism is deregulation for Wall Street. It's the Iraq War. It's military intervention in Libya. It's pushing military intervention in Syria. So her idea of centrism is a hawkish foreign policy and policies that help Wall Street here at home on the domestic front and the economic front. So that's why this is fucking insufferable. Because she lied and was like, oh, no, I'm totally progressive. Now it's over. Yeah, I'm a centrist. And also because that argument presupposes that, you know, the right and the left somehow have equally half valid points and you split the difference between them. But no, the Republican Party, the politicians in Washington are fucking crazy. So if you say I want to meet them halfway, that means you are half crazy. So that's not something to fucking be proud of and act like that's you're some sort of intellectual. Oh, not so smart. I said, let's go to the middle. What could possibly be wrong with that? Goldman Sachs, do you have more money for me? Wonderful. She's not going away, and somehow she's getting worse, man. Somehow she's getting worse. That sort of milquetoast, pro-establishment, pro-corporate nonsense is nothing but apologetics for bad policy. Because you want to know, you want to know who's really an international centrist? Me. I'm not a centrist in the U.S. sense because our spectrum is way off to the right, so centrism is just far right in the U.S. But when you look at all the industrialized nations, I'm a centrist because I'm right smack dab in the middle of popular opinion. And I want things like universal health care, you know, single payer. I want free college. I want a living wage. I want to end the wars. You know, these are things that the overwhelming majority of people believe in. These are things that when it comes to the domestic front, these are things that other industrial nations already have. They already have these things. So when I come along and say, hey, I agree with them, if I talk to people in those countries, they wouldn't say I'm some sort of far-left crazy person. No, they'd be like, oh, you're really reasonable and centrist. That's what you are. So I'm the real centrist, internationally speaking. It just so happens that in the U.S., with our spectrum in Washington, to be specific, I come across as the most far-left person on the planet because the spectrum in Washington is super far-right, which is why Bernie Sanders looks like he's some sort of radical when he's saying the most banal, uncontroversial, duh shit on the planet. And also, final point to make here is the spectrum in Washington is the issue here. Because when you look at the American people, they actually agree with the other modern industrial nations. So the problem is she's a creature of Washington. And if you're a creature of Washington and you talk about being some sort of reasonable centrist, you're actually just a douche. Okay. All right, I got to keep going here because I still got one more on Hillary. I hate to do it to you, but I got to do it. So Hillary Clinton sat down for an interview with Ezra Klein of Vox recently. We just discussed one portion of that interview. But in a different part, he brought up the issue of money in politics. Wow, that's actually surprising. Vox leaned in a pro-Hillary direction, and they weren't too hot on Bernie Sanders, so it's surprising that they bring up a substantive issue like that. But her answer is just 100% unfiltered, classic Hillary Clinton. And it shows, I think, probably the main reason why she lost to Trump. So look at this. This is what Hillary says. I tell people all the time, if you're in a high income tax bracket, I want to tax you. If you still want to give me money, you are going in with your eyes open. I think it's theoretically an interesting conversation, but you look at somebody like President Obama, who took a lot of money from a lot of different interests, but it didn't affect how he governed. Oh, please. And so let's get to the second level here. Then Ezra interjects and says, I do think that's strong, though, to say that it didn't affect how he governed. A lot of people feel he could have done more to punish bankers. On healthcare, there were deals cut before the fact with the pharmaceutical industry, with the insurance industry. And there is evidence that these kinds of donations do give these interests more of a voice than it does affect things, certainly in the details. So he's saying, no, money in politics does affect these politicians, even Obama. There's countless examples of it affecting Obama. You know, Medicare still can't negotiate for drug prices. Obama continued that. The deal was cut under Bush. Obama continued it. He could have said, no, we're going to negotiate with the pharmaceutical companies for better drug prices. He didn't do it. Why? Money in politics. The giant bailout of Wall Street. You know, that didn't come with new Glass-Steagall regulations. They just bailed him out, no strings attached. Of course that's a product of money in politics and him taking Wall Street money. Duh. But Hillary acts like, no, Obama wasn't affected by that money at all. Oh, my goodness. She thinks you're stupid. That's what she thinks. She thinks you're going to buy that. He just gave a speech. The first time he was in the news after he left the presidency was what? Him getting paid a tremendous amount of money for a Wall Street speech. Don't tell me that money doesn't affect him. It affects everybody because it's fucking human nature. So first she says the money doesn't affect him. Then Ezra Klein goes, actually, yes, it does. And then here's her response. Well, but, you know, it's always been thus. I mean, if you've seen the musical Hamilton, you know, if you're running a raucous or, yeah, whatever. And then it stops. She's a parody of a corporatist and a neoliberal. Money didn't affect Obama. Money doesn't affect politics. By the way, unless she's talking about Republicans. In which case she goes, oh, they've taken money from big oil, and then they do the bidding of big oil, and they don't believe in climate change. She made that point during the debates. She goes, oh, am I supposed to believe that the Republicans aren't affected by the ExxonMobil money that they get every year? They are affected by it, of course, but that's the same reason why you're affected by the Wall Street money, dingus. She's unbelievable. She doesn't care that she contradicts herself and makes terrible points. She thinks, like, no, I'm going to override this and I'm going to make you believe what I'm saying. No, nobody believes it, which is why you fucking lost. But that's amazing how she goes from, the money didn't affect Obama, the money doesn't affect politicians. And then Ezra Klein is like, yeah, it does, here's a few examples. She's like, yeah, it's always been like that. Which is it, Hillary, you unserious clown? Which is it? The money doesn't affect it. Sure it does, but it's always been like that. So let's be clear. The first one was a lie. Maybe it's the thing that she tells herself at night so she can sleep better, but really it's a lie when it comes down to it. That's what that is. It's a lie. Money doesn't affect us. The reality is the second point where she said, yeah, it's always been like that. That's how she really thinks. And this is why, you know, Bernie Sanders is the most liked politician in America right now, and she's one of the most disliked politicians in America. This is why. Because Bernie Sanders dares to question the fundamental underpinnings of the system. In other words, he's the kind of person who looks at the system as it currently exists and says, no, we could do things radically different than we do it now. We could do it radically different. We can get the money out of the political system. We can have universal health care. Hillary famously said during the campaign, single payer will never happen. Well, Bernie says, no, if we want to create a better society, we have to dare to try to push the limits of what's possible and get to the point where we do what every other modern nation does. So Bernie dared to question the fundamental underpinnings of our society and all the fucked up problems. Whereas what did Hillary do? She conveniently bakes into the cake the worst aspects of our society and then argues, hey, we could tweak around the edges for certain things. That's incrementalism. That's corporatism. That's, hey, look, that's just the way the system works, man. What do you want me to say? I have to raise a tremendous amount of money from Wall Street. What do you want me to say? I have to raise money from private health insurance companies. That's just par for the course. We're never going to have a single-payer system. It's just par for the course, man. What do you want me to do? Maybe I'll tweak around the edges and, you know, make it so that we cover a couple million more people through one avenue or another, but I'm not going to, you know, cover everybody. You think I'm going to do universal coverage and it's going to cost less and you're going to get better outcomes? No, we can't do that. Don't be crazy. You think I'm going to not have Wall Street bankers at the table when I'm crafting economic policy? It's just par for the course, man. That's just the way the system works. That's one of the most cancerous ideas and backwards philosophies you could possibly have in politics. So that's just the way it is. What do you want me to do? Well, yeah, in 1917, what do you mean women can't vote? That's just the way it is. What do you want me to say? What do you want me to say? Sure, maybe if we were starting from scratch, that's another one they love to make, another point they love to make. If we were starting from scratch, maybe we'd do single-payer Medicare for all, but we're not, so we can't. If we're starting from scratch, maybe we'd get women the right to vote, but they, come on, they don't have the right to vote. What are we going to do? If we're starting from scratch, maybe we'd make the South stop fucking official segregation, but what do you want me to do? Separate but equal. What do you mean? Hey, they're saying they're equal, right? So what are we going to do? We can't question the fundamental underpinnings. It'll never happen. Whereas a guy like Bernie says, and the progressive base says, hey, fuck you and what you tell me is and isn't possible. We're going to fight for the right things. We're not going to concede to this monstrosity of a system that's rotting from within. But Hillary says, it's always been thus. That's Hillary 101. Money doesn't affect politics. Actually, yes, it does. Here's a few examples. It's always been this way. Only candidate who would have lost to Trump. Now you see exactly why. Okay. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Chelsea Manning, disinvited from Harvard. I'm going to go off on that. Bill Maher, chastising the Bernie wing again with his guests. Ted Cruz beating off. Oh, forget it, man. I got so much stuff. Happy to be back. Stay right there, guys. We will be right back. Thank you.
with the left, the left. You will fake, so I'm gonna drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left.
We back, bitch. Okay. All right. Now, let's talk a little bit about the insufferable corporate Democrats. I have a dispatch from the corporate Democrat bubble for you all. This is from Raw Story and Alternate. There's no such thing as a good Trump voter. There's no such thing as a good Trump voter. I like the picture they used, too. It's a very flattering picture. Now, are there many deplorable Trump voters? Sure, of course, you know. Are there some that voted for him because he said shit like, we're going to ban all Muslims from coming to the U.S., and because he said, you know, the Mexicans, they're criminals, they're rapists. I assume some are good people. Are there some that voted for him because he said he wanted to do nationwide stop and frisk, which fails over 99% of the time and overwhelmingly targets minorities and takes away their Fourth Amendment protection from unreasonable search and seizure? Yes, there are many people who voted for him because of the bigotry and the xenophobia, and I have no problem with calling them deplorables. So let's be clear about that. But, the title is, there's no such thing as a good Trump voter. And when you read the piece, it becomes clear. They're talking about how it's all because of race. They're all racist. There's no such thing as a good Trump voter, they say. So they're racist, they're sexist, and it has nothing to do with economic anxiety. Really? So all Trump voters are motivated by the exact same thing. It's not that, hey, some are deeply bigoted and xenophobic and they voted for him for all the wrong reasons. And others, you know, maybe heard his rhetoric on NAFTA and TPP and jobs and said, I think he's not going to outsource my job, so I'm going to vote for him. Whereas Hillary backed outsourcing deals. It's impossible that somebody listened to him and said, no, I think he's like an anti-establishment wrecking ball going through the elites. So, yes, I'm going to vote for him for that reason. I think he'll break up this insanely corrupt system. Now, again, to be clear, since he got elected, Trump has not done that. He's the establishment's bitch boy. But when he was on the campaign trail, it's impossible. None of his voters said, oh, I'm going to vote for him for those reasons. See, that's just... that kind of mentality and philosophy will lead to permanent losses for the Democrats. Because you know what they're doing, right? They're shaming people who they should be trying to get to vote for our candidates. You're not going to win them over by shaming them. You're a bad person. You're so bad. Why are you such a bad person? You're evil. There's no such thing as a good Trump voter. You're so bad. All of you are so bad. Is that going to win people over? Now, again, some people, it is impossible to win over. There's a certain portion of Trump supporters, yes, it is impossible to win them over, and you shouldn't even try because it's fucking impossible. So it's a total waste of time and energy. But that's not all of them. There are plenty of them that you can reach, and you have to reach if you want to fucking win.
But Hillary won the popular vote.
But the system doesn't go by the popular vote. It should. It should, but it doesn't. So if you keep spitting in the eye of all Trump voters and slapping them across the face, well, then be prepared to continue to win the popular vote, but lose the Electoral College in future elections. So it is so fucking smug and condescending and self-righteous and arrogant and stupid to say shit like, there's no such thing as a good Trump voter. None. They don't exist. Well, how about this next headline here? We've spoken about this recently. Report, Trump voters in Michigan like economically populist Democrats. Wow. There were a tremendous number of people. I think it's something like 11%. that voted for Obama twice and then voted for Trump. And remember, the headline was, there's no such thing as a good Trump voter. They're all racist, sexist, deplorables. But what about the people who voted for Obama twice? And they're in a place like Michigan, which was destroyed by trade deals that Hillary favored. And then they voted for Trump because Trump's rhetoric on the campaign trail was anti-NAFTA, anti-TPP, in favor of creating jobs here. Let's stop wasting money in these stupid wars. This is shit he said on the campaign trail. And there are people who overlook the bigotry and the racism and the xenophobia. Now, again, that doesn't excuse it. Of course not. The bigotry and the racism is horrendous. But to say that there are no good Trump voters, that's saying I can't reach any of you. And that's not true. If 11% voted for Obama and then voted for Trump. And by the way, what does that also show? They felt let down by Obama. Because they thought Obama was going to be the one to do a new deal and bring jobs back to where they were and stop outsourcing, and he didn't. So it's just they want to keep losing. This is the Hillary wing of the party. This is the corporatist wing of the party. And this is the stuff they believe. They want to keep shaming people. It's hilarious because they try the same thing with the so-called far left, where they try to shame people who couldn't bring themselves to vote for Hillary Clinton. Stupid far left, purity test, pie in the sky, unicorn, fairy dust. Stupid. You gave us Trump. You're so stupid. Fall in line. So their only tactic, because they can win on the content of their ideas, their only tactic is shaming people. Shame all Trump voters. Shame people who are to the left of you. And then wonder why you keep losing elections. Well, maybe it's because you don't fucking stand for anything. And the only tool you have is to shame and wag your finger. No, we should be reaching out to these people because we can get them. Of course we can get them. People whose main concern is economic, again, I'm not saying all Trump voters' concerns are economic. It's not. It's not. Many of them voted for him because of the bigotry, and you can't reach them. But were some of the people who voted for Trump, is their concern economic? Yes. Can you reach those people? Fuck yeah. And a lot of polls show they're already with us. When you look at the polling data, 60% of the American people want Medicare for all. More Republicans want it than don't want it. Where's the question, son? Of course we can get these people on our side. They're already on our side. You just have to have candidates who believe in these things, also known as populist Democrats, Bernie-style Democrats. Bernie Sanders did a town hall in West Virginia in a room full of Trump-voting West Virginians. According to these classes, no such thing as a good Trump voter. No such thing. So don't even try to get those people. Why are you even bothering? They're bad people. Shame on them. They're bad people. Well, guess what? Bernie got a standing ovation from a room full of West Virginia Trump voters when he brought up Medicare for all and free college and a living wage. And a New Deal. And doing green technology jobs. You want to know why? Because he actually believes in those ideas, and he makes a good case for them. And even Trump-voting West Virginians go, I think that makes sense, man. And they gave him a standing ovation. So I hope the corporatists and the establishment Democrats, the Clintonites, I hope they're prepared to keep losing. Because with bullshit, idiotic arguments like this, that's what's going to happen. Okay. All right, now, all right, let's talk about Chelsea Manning. So Harvard invited Chelsea Manning to teach, and as a result of that, establishment snowflakes went absolutely berserk. So Trevor Tim wrote in the New York Times about what happened next. He says, on Wednesday, Harvard's Kennedy School announced that Chelsea Manning, the former Army intelligence analyst and whistleblower, would be a visiting fellow this fall. The reaction was swift. A day later, Michael Morell, a former acting director of the CIA and also a visiting fellow at the school, resigned from his own fellowship in protest. His resignation was quickly followed by the current director of the CIA, Mike Pompeo. canceling a speech scheduled at the school. In a statement, Mr. Pompeo unilaterally declared Ms. Manning a traitor. On Friday morning, the school folded, disinviting Ms. Manning in a cowardly act that does immense disservice to his students and the public debate around government secrecy. It's remarkable that one of the country's premier educational institutions would bow to CIA pressure and reject a person who has arguably done more to contribute to the public's understanding of world diplomacy than anyone else in modern times. In early 2010, Ms. Manning leaked a trove of hundreds of thousands of State Department and Defense Department documents, an archive that opened an unparalleled window into American foreign policy. Its documents have been referenced by major news organizations so many times that it's impossible to count them. The important revelations in the Manning documents, originally leaked to WikiLeaks and published in conjunction with the New York Times and other newspapers, are also too numerous to name, but they include the fact that the United States had killed far more people in Iraq than the government had admitted publicly, that United States soldiers turned a blind eye to torture by Iraqi soldiers, and that the United States covered up the killing of civilians by American soldiers. Okay. So this is why Chelsea Manning is viewed as a hero, because she exposed war crimes that the U.S. committed. Now, furthermore, that actually led to the original drawdown of troops from Iraq. We've subsequently went back in there because our system is so horrendous that they decided, let's get back in there. But they couldn't get a status of forces agreement with the Iraqi government because the Iraqi government said, we just saw the war crimes you committed. We're not going to let you come back in here unless we can try the people who committed those war crimes in our courts. And the U.S. said no, so there was a drawdown of troops in Iraq. So we have Chelsea Manning to thank for the brief drawdown of troops in Iraq, because she exposed the United States massacring civilians. There was a video of people killing people from the media and then laughing about it and saying, is that an enemy? Oh, I don't know. We killed him anyway. She exposed this. She exposed stuff that the American people should know. A democracy, we should have that information in a free representative democracy so we can make decisions as to who to vote in and who to vote out. Our government is killing innocent people with our money, in our name. Chelsea Manning leaks that information, and then everybody calls her a traitor. No, how about the government are the ones who were traitors? The people who were killing the innocent civilians with our money in our name, how about their traitors? So notice the trick. Don't get mad at the people who committed the crimes. By the way, they didn't spend a day in jail. Chelsea Manning did. But don't get mad at the people who committed the crimes. Get mad at the people who exposed the crimes. That's how you perpetuate a broken, corrupt, permanent war state. That's how you do it. So Harvard has these cretins that are teaching or giving a speech. Morrell, hey, by the way, these CIA people who are, teaching at Harvard are war criminals. These are people who participated in, sided with, advocated for torture. So violation of U.S. law, violation of the Constitution, violation of international law, violation of human rights, the Geneva Convention, the Nuremberg Tribunal. So they advocate torture. These are people who advocated arming Al-Qaeda. I'm not kidding. So in Syria, we've got to arm the rebels. You know, the U.S. policy has gone back and forth on Syria about 300 times. David Petraeus is somebody. He also had a speaking gig there. He said, let's arm Al-Qaeda. He actually leaked information to his mistress that was classified information. Didn't leak it for the public good. Leaked it because somebody was touching his pecker. So, he liked a person. So here, you could have secrets. I'm not whistleblowing for the better of the country. I'm just going to give the person who plays with my pee-pee, top secret information. He gets to speak there. He gets to advocate arming Al-Qaeda, torturing. These people get to speak there. No problem whatsoever. By the way, they should be in jail. Let's be clear. If you advocate torture, participated in torture, armed Al-Qaeda, you should be in jail. But no, they're revered. Oh, the CIA! Our government institutions are by definition correct, so they get to speak here. Mike Pompeo, he canceled his speech. Mike Pompeo is the head of the CIA right now. He said we should assassinate Edward Snowden. The guy advocates for extrajudicial killings of an American citizen. Let's kill Edward Snowden. No trial, no nothing. Just kill him. Let's have the CIA murder him. They want him. They're like, you speak. And then he resigns in protest, as if, like, you know, his action should carry any weight to it. Like, motherfucker, you aspire to be a war criminal. You probably are. If you're running the CIA now, you probably already are a war criminal. I mean, we're talking about an institution that's whole fucking purpose was to overthrow democratically elected governments to do the bidding of our corporations so that we get the natural resources. It's like we live in a fucking sick movie. I mean, this is a joke. This is a joke. You have a hero, a whistleblower, who exposed war crimes, and the people who committed the fucking war crimes say, I'm resigning in protest unless you get rid of the whistleblower who exposed our crimes. These people should be in jail cells, man. They're the criminals. Chelsea Manning is a hero. But no, Harvard caves. And also, by the way, another point and aspect of this is the fucking snowflakes on the right triggered by fucking heroes, you know? Look, I'm the first one to come out and do segments whenever a guy like Ben Shapiro or Steven Crowder or Milo Yiannopoulos or somebody on the right, if they're going to speak at a college campus and there's counter-protests and people want to deplatform them and say, we don't even want to allow you to speak, I disagree with those people, and I'm on the side of the people I despise. Ben Shapiro, Steven Crowder, Milo Yiannopoulos, you name it. I'm fine with having them speak at college campuses because I actually believe in free speech. This is an instance where a fucking whistleblower who's a hero, who exposed U.S. crimes, was disinvited from a teaching gig, and where's the... I don't hear the people on the right standing up in solidarity and saying, come on, what are we talking about here? Are you serious? You're going to disinvite her? Where are you? Where are you? A bunch of triggered snowflakes said, oh, it's a microaggression to have a hero speak, and I don't hear you. Funny how that works. Funny how that works. Every single time a right-winger is disinvited, I do a segment defending them. But when there's a left-winger, a hero in this instance, who's disinvited, where the fuck are the segments of the right-wingers? Saying, you know what, look, man, this is all about free speech, this is all about free expression, you have to let her talk, don't disinvite her, this is crazy, what are you doing? Weird how the outrage over free speech only works one way. You know, Anna Kasparian of the Young Turks was disinvited from speaking at a college because there were Trump supporters on the panel that decided to disinvite her. Where's the outrage over that? Rania Kolik. She's a left-winger. She's a journalist. And she was disinvited from speaking on the issue of Syria. Where the right-wingers say, I stand with Anna Kasparian, I stand with Rania Kolik, I stand with every single pro-Palestinian speaker who was disinvited. One of those happens, by the way, like every other month. There's either a pro-Palestinian professor or somebody who's going to come give a speech who's disinvited because people say, oh, he supports BDS, that's anti-Semitism. They disinvite him. So, weird. You have genuine repression of ideas that are left-wing ideas, and the outrage over free speech doesn't seem to work both ways. It only seems to work when it's somebody like Milo Yiannopoulos. And again, I'm consistent on this. I'm fine with letting the right-winger speak, but I'd like to hear people get up in arms and argue for the free speech of left-wingers too when they're disinvited from college campuses or they get a teaching gig jacked from them because some CIA snowflakes who are war criminals who should be in prison said, oh, I'm against this. Harvard, shame on you. You are fucking pathetic, and you're a tool of the deep state. Literally, literally, the head of the CIA. That is the definition of the deep state. I don't want you to do this. Yes, sir, we won't do this. Fuck you and your bending of the knee to the establishment. You have no idea how cowardly you look and how history will judge this. Because Hillary... Wow. That was a weird and terrible Freudian slip. Because Chelsea Manning is a hero. And just like, remember Daniel Ellsberg and the Pentagon Papers? Hey, he showed that we're napalming and agent oranging innocent villages in Vietnam. Just like how that information was leaked. And at first everybody said, oh, traitor! Well, now everybody goes, that was a hero. What the fuck were we thinking? Well, what do you think is going to happen with Chelsea Manning? What do you think is going to happen with Edward Snowden? You already have people today who recognize these are heroes. What do you think it's going to be like in 50 years? You think the tide is going to turn and all of a sudden people are going to think the CIA is a noble institution? Fuck off. Pathetic. Harvard is a disgusting joke, and this is the dumbest thing they could have done. Okay. All right, now let's go to some coverage of Trump from the media. All right, where the fuck is it? Here we go. Okay. Donald Trump was tweeting up a storm the other day, of course, and he retweeted a joke about Hillary Clinton, and the media melted down over it. So let's watch a few clips of that, and then we'll come back and discuss.
This morning, we can show you this. We have to be careful because of the Twitter handle of the individual who sent it in the first place. The President of the United States. The President of the United States retweeting a video on Twitter that shows him hitting a golf ball and then the golf ball striking Hillary Clinton and knocking her down. You see it there. The President of the United States retweeted that this morning. Why? What? He's at Bedminster. He's at Bedminster.
He's at Bedminster. Traditionally, historically speaking, weekends at Bedminster, even at an important time like a weekend when he's going into the United Nations General Assembly for the first time as the
right.
President of the United States, are risky times. Maybe he's by himself. Maybe he's not surrounded by as many aides as he usually is, certainly not at this hour of the morning. I think, Karin's right. He's a disruptor, and he has these impulses. He enjoys engaging on social media. You hear him talk about that's so important to his identity, and people want to hear from him. But it is unusual coming off of this last couple weeks.
We can't find the words. It's interesting because he is the President of the United States. It is insane
and
kind of thing.
And it's just you, this retweet by the President this morning. He was very active on Twitter this morning. If you see there's no sound. It's an image of the President golfing, a golf ball hitting Hillary Clinton and knocking her down from the back. David Urban, I know how Senator Santorum feels about his tweets. Is this appropriate?
Look, if the President speaks directly to folks, I'm not going to judge what's appropriate or inappropriate in the President. Retweets do not equal endorsement. I think it says it on the bottom of his Twitter deck.
Why is he so obsessed with Hillary Clinton still?
I don't think he's obsessed with Hillary Clinton.
When decent people, decent Republicans, who I know would judge Democrats differently, give and normalize what Donald Trump is doing. We cannot normalize this kind of behavior from the President of the United States. He is still an example. If your 6-year-old son did this, he'd be punished. And so the 71-year-old should not be accepted. This is, he's being a jerk, and he's not being a president.
Yeah, man. I don't get the media. I really don't. I feel like, and I think some of you might disagree with me on this, but I feel like their moral compass and their outrage meter, it's just so broken. Like, so that, you can say that's unpresidential, and of course it is, for a president to fucking retweet something like that. But look, when it comes down to it, nobody can act like that's not a joke. Trump hitting a golf ball, and then the golf ball hitting Hillary, and Hillary, like, tripping, and it's obviously, slapped together and fake, and everybody knows it's fake, and it's so Trump's doing that, and obviously his base is going to eat it up and think it's funny, and it's not like some people are saying, the president is advocating violence against women here. Well, actually, no. You know when the president advocated violence against women? When his first act as president did a military act as president was a botched raid that ended up killing a young American girl. And there was less outrage over the president massacring a little girl than there was over this fucking tweet, which was a joke. That's what I don't get. The same fucking day that Trump retweeted that, that got all the news. Let me give you another one of his tweets from that day. Loser terrorists must be dealt with in a much tougher manner. The internet is their main recruitment tool, which we must cut off and use better. He's calling for regulation of the internet. He's calling for a direct violation of the First Amendment. Let the government decide what is and isn't acceptable when it comes to stuff posted on the internet. And they say, oh, we'll start out with whatever, terrorists. But then that becomes, I don't know, maybe if you're just a Muslim fundamentalist. And then that becomes, I don't know, maybe if you're, we think you're a left-wing agitator during one of these protests, you know, if we think you're a communist and you're an enemy of the state, maybe we shut down you. And then, by the way, Republicans, would you trust a Democratic administration with this? Maybe, you know, it's we shut down the Nazi websites, and the Nazi websites become the KKK websites, and the KKK websites become just your run-of-the-mill racist websites, and just your run-of-the-mill racist websites becomes far-right-wing websites, and the far-right-wing right-wing websites, maybe we shut down the right-wing websites. Maybe anybody who disagrees with the current government has their free speech curtailed on the internet in the name of stopping terror. So, in other words, that same fucking day, Trump tweets something that has really serious policy implications and implications for the First Amendment and basic freedoms, and the corporate media lost their mind over the tweet that was a gif of a joke. There was another tweet the same day where Trump is provoking North Korea again, and he's calling Kim Jong-un Rocket Man. So the guy is like tweeting us into having no civil liberties, taking away our First Amendment rights. The guy is tweeting us into potential war. The media's got nothing to say about those policy-related tweets. They focus on the one that's the joke. That's why I don't get it, man. I don't get their outrage. I mean, that, she was like, what's her name? Anna Navarro or something? She was seriously pissed over, how dare you tweet a thing that's a joke gif of you hitting a golf ball at Hillary Clinton? How dare you? Right now, they're trying to get rid of Obamacare again. They're one or two votes short in the Senate. Media's not even discussing that. Mainstream media's not even discussing that. They talked about it the last few times. This time, they're too busy talking about Trump's GIF joke tweet. GIF, JIF, whatever. I think the creator said it's called JIF, whatever. They're too busy talking about that than to talk about the serious policy implications of what's happening. Look, man, it's boy who cried wolf, if you ask me. I really think this does damage to the actual resistance against Trump. Because if you get outraged over every little thing that's irrelevant, like a joke tweet, well, then when it's time to actually get mad at him over real shit, people roll their eyes and they go, here they go again, the media, shitting on Trump nonstop. So keep your outrage powder dry for when it's fucking policy related and it matters, as opposed to when it's a joke. Because then you set it up for them to go, get over it, you're fucking snowflakes. Wouldn't it be nice to actually have a substantive response to that? When they, like, if somebody calls me a snowflake for saying, hey, we shouldn't massacre little girls with our military, as Trump did with his first military act, you could accuse me of being a snowflake over that, and I say, you're a fucking idiot. I'm against, like, genocide of innocent people. That's not snowflakeism. That's common sense and rationality. But if somebody calls you a snowflake because you got mad over the fucking joke tweet of hitting a golf ball at Hillary, which is obviously a joke, and they call you a snowflake, you have no response because that is kind of being a snowflake. Okay. All right, let's go to Bill Maher. Actually, you know what? Let me do the Ted Cruz first. I gotta do the Ted Cruz one. Yeah, I'm gonna do. Let me do a couple before I get to the Bill Maher one. While I was gone, there was a Ted Cruz porn scandal. My goodness. We knew it was coming one day or another. But this one is actually relatively mild, I must say. So he liked a porn tweet. He liked a porn tweet. Now, it was one of the most banal porn videos ever created. You know, I don't even know the total backstory, but it's some woman walks in, I guess, what's her house, and she sees, I don't know, her boyfriend, her son, or her daughter fucking a guy or something like that. And she starts, like, touching herself. I don't know if she ends up getting in on the action and becomes threesome, a little threesome action. But it was, you know, just boring-ass, regular-type porn. Cruz liked it. It sat in the likes for a good solid, I want to say, at least two hours, and then it was unliked, of course. And then I think the next day, Cruz, said, "There's a staffer who was responsible for this, and we're dealing with it." Yeah, come on, man. The excuses, oh God, they're just. I would have so much more respect for him if he's like, "Yeah, bitch. That was me. I was beating my meat. I was beating my little Christian meat, getting my nut, and then I fell asleep in the computer chair with a bunch of man juice on my belly, and then I woke up to realize the world had seen me accidentally like a porn tweet." He was probably, like, watching the video and going to work, and then he accidentally, like, fuck, he hit like by accident, and he fell asleep in the chair afterwards. No, but seriously, there is a serious aspect of this, of course. Which is that Ted Cruz is a fucking monumental hypocrite. This is a guy, family values, Christianity, yes, absolutely, I'm such a good, wholesome family man. Now please rub some titties in my face. But the really annoying thing is that he fired a woman who had previously acted in softcore porn, and this was a woman who was in one of his ads. And when it was discovered that she had done softcore porn, he fired her. What he did is he stopped running the ad. He's like, "Don't run that ad anymore. Can't have this unwholesome lady who was in softcore porn being one of my wholesome ads. Yes, yes. Let me, like, big old titties in my face." But then also, when he was attorney general in Texas, he argued to uphold a ban on dildos. And he made the case that you don't have a right to stimulate your own genitals. So it's not a right to be able to sell dildos. The state of Texas wants to ban or continue to ban the sale of dildos. Ted Cruz tried to uphold that ban. Ted Cruz argued in a court of law you don't have a right to masturbate. And then Ted Cruz went home and masturbated to vanilla ass porn. By the way, after this happened, the Twitter handle at Sexual Post, I think it was, started selling shirts of Ted Cruz. Look at them; they're hilarious. One of them is "Masturbate Ted," and it's a little Ted Cruz face. "Ted Cruz approved" is the other one. The other one says "Master Debater" with the Cruz face on the old Obama poster, and the other one says "Ted's right hand man." Oh, what a fucking hypocrite. And also, what a gross thought of that guy with his smarmy face and his pudgy ass body jacking his little Christian dick.
Oh yeah, oh, this feels so good. Me Oh, I'm done.
I usually last 17 seconds. I broke a record there. I did 19. Okay. Whew. Okay. Now let's go to horrible story on civil asset forfeiture. The Twitter account at Moreno, M-O-R-E-N-O, recorded some really fucked up stuff that the UC Berkeley police did. This is what's called civil asset forfeiture in action.
That's not right, man.
Oh.
That's how it works.
That's not right.
Oh. Let me look at the middle.
Back up, back up.
Oh, that's not right.
Look at the middle.
What's that?
We don't mind if you guys want to observe. We just want to see what's in a good distance.
That's not right. This is Berkeley PD or UC Berkeley PD?
And the judge can decide whether or not it's
right. Are you going to take his hard-earned money? People could drink on campus on football games and no tickets, but a hard-working man selling hot dogs, earning a living, gets his money taken away and a ticket.
He doesn't ever permit.
Trust their vote of control. Wow.
Yep, this is law and order next.
Law and order. No, it's not. I got to see people drinking in public on campus who are not working.
Did you call us?
Go down the street,
did you call
right
us?
Now. I am telling you right now.
Did you call us?
Go down.
You didn't call us.
Okay,
thank you.
Walk 200 feet to your left, and you'll see drinking in public, but a hardworking man gets his money taken away and a ticket. That's not right.
So let me get a hug.
That ain't right, man. That ain't right.
Law
and order for the few.
The money.
That ain't right, man. That ain't right.
Good cop, way to go. Good job.
That ain't right, man.
Good job. You really did a great
welcome.
Job there.
Thank you.
Nice work.
Yeah.
You protected us.
You protected the public. That ain't
you're
right.
Welcome.
Hey,
I'm working for you.
Not for me, brother. Not for me. And I'm disappointed. As an alumni, I'm disappointed in this campus.
On you. And you.
Why are you disappointed on me?
Because
I stand up for somebody who's working hard.
You're critical thinking right here.
Oh, this ain't critical thinking.
Just say who's conducted
this. I will, ma'am. But you know what? This is wrong. I'll post it for you guys to check it out. Hardworking person getting a ticket and money taken away.
Wow. That was ugly, man. That was ugly. That's what's called civil asset forfeiture, which is, of course, a very fancy, respectable way of saying legalized robbery by cop. Because that's what that was. Now, theoretically, it's supposed to be a situation where they think, oh, if we don't take their property or their money, it is inevitably going to be used in a drug deal or something. So we must do that in order to prevent this inevitable wrong from occurring. But as you can see, in practice, that's not what happened. They took this poor guy who's trying to earn a living, and he's like, I don't know, selling hot dogs or some shit outside of a game. They go, you don't have a permit? Oh, that's nice. Well, here, let me write you a ticket, and then also open up your wallet and take all the money out. Are you fucking kidding me? And let's stop and reflect on something here for a second. Imagine for me that was a white guy or a white girl that perhaps was the kid of a Wall Streeter. Would it be handled in the same way? I don't think so, man. Because then the cop goes, ooh, maybe they know somebody or one of their parents or something has power. In which case, I'm not gonna get in deep shit here. But when it looks like a guy who might be an immigrant or something, darker skin tone, yeah, fuck it, let's take money. And by the way, that cop is a random point to make, but I'll make it anyway. Looks like Peter Dow. I'm sure most of my audience knows who Peter Dow is. If you don't, lucky you. It's like Hillary Clinton's biggest defender, the guy who made that goofy site Verit. And to be fair to Peter, I'm sure he's against shit like this, but he does look like Peter Dow. But for those of you who don't know, there's actually more money taken through civil asset forfeiture than through actual burglary in America. Isn't that crazy? So cops steal more money than robbers steal money. And does that look like law and order to you? You're going to rob him. He didn't get a permit, so we're going to give him a fine and then rob him. It's unbelievable, man. And then many many police departments around the country, they're legally allowed to take that money and put it towards what they want. So there was one story we covered a while ago where they fixed up their break room and put like a margarita machine and a cappuccino machine in the break room, and they did that all with money that they stole from people. And civil asset forfeiture flips the burden of proof, by the way, which is why even right-wingers, like many libertarians, like Rand Paul, he's against it, because it flips the burden of proof. It's not innocent until proven guilty. They take your money, and then you have to prove in a court of law that they should give it back. And, of course, the process is antiquated, and nobody goes through it, and so the cops just end up keeping the money. There are two sets of laws in this country. There's only justice for some. If you're rich, or if you wear the badge, or if you're a politician, you're on a different level, and you don't have to play by the same rules. If you're a regular person, if you're a poor person, or you're a person of color, or even some middle-class people, you're in a different category entirely, where for you it's the letter of the law, and you know they'll crack down on you. For the powerful, no. They get away with most stuff. So don't try to tell me that justice is blind, because it clearly isn't. Okay. All right, I think I have time for one more. We'll do Bill Maher's, and then I got two stories for tomorrow already. We got through a decent amount, man. I had a lot of stories today. Bill Maher and his panel spoke about the Bernie wing versus the Hillary wing and purity tests last week on his show. So here he is talking to Fran Lebowitz, that's her name, and Salman Rushdie is also on the panel. He's going to weigh in here as well. And look at what they say. Watch, and then we'll discuss.
What do you think the Democrats should do to repair this, or should they repair it?
Do you mean to repair the rift between?
Yes.
Bill, I think we should stop thinking about Bernie Sanders. I would really love to stop thinking about him. I know you found him kind of benign. You know, I did not find him benign. I found him to be an unbelievably irritating, narcissistic old man. You know, and I also kept thinking, like, who leaves New York when they're 18? I mean, that's who you have to ask. Like, what do you look around and think, you know, no, I can't make it. I'm going to Vermont.
I think we should please forget about Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. This is a battle that's over. It's over.
I agree. Well,
and I also think that this problem of the rift in the left, where there's a section of the left that wants the purest, more snowy than driven snow candidate.
Yes.
Snowflakier.
Yeah.
Than the snowflakier snowflake.
Right. Yeah.
That's what they want. And that's not only a problem in this country. It's a problem in England, where they want Jeremy Corbyn, who represents that ideal of leftiness,
right,
which can't possibly be elected. Or in France, the Mélenchon people, who don't want to vote for Macron because he's not purely left enough. And what all this does is to drive a wedge through which the right can come. And that's something you said on this show a few months ago that I have to tell you, I have been quoting, Bill.
Wow.
Yeah. You said that we have to learn to distinguish between an imperfect friend and a deadly enemy.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going nuclear on these guys, because this point has been made over and over since the election, and it is the exact wrong conclusion. The so-called purity, purest of the pure, snowflakiest of the snowflake left-wing candidates are the ones that fucking win. They are the ones that win. You want to know why? Because they actually have things that they believe in. They're not shapeshifters. They're not chameleons. They're not flip-floppers. Bernie Sanders has been saying the same goddamn thing since the 1970s. And guess what? The polls show the American people are overwhelmingly on his side. 60% of people want Medicare for all. 58% of people want free college. 80% of people want a living wage. only 17% of people still want to be in Afghanistan. They want to end these unnecessary wars. 60% of people want to legalize marijuana. You go down the list of the left-wing ideas, the purity of the purest, snowflakiest of the snowflakiest ideas, that's the American people. That's what they want. And a candidate comes along and says, I agree with the American people, and idiots like Salman Rushdie and Bill Maher and Fran Lebowitz sit there and go, please, no, that's the last thing we should do is give people what they want. We have to get away from this idea that somehow a purity test or a litmus test is a bad thing. It's like saying, ooh, you actually believe in something? How dare you believe in something? How dare you have actual policy ideas that you want to stick to? You know what, guys? Some things aren't fucking debatable. If somebody came out and said, segregation, you know what, segregation, that's debatable. Why do you have to be so pure and end segregation? You really just want to end it? Well, what if we don't think we could end it because it's in the South, it's been there for a while, what are we going to do here? Women voting, I think that one's not debatable. Oh, how dare you with your fucking purity test? Guess what? Medicare for All is one of those things that is in the non-debatable category. If every other industrialized nation has one form of single payer or another, they cover everybody and it costs less, then why the fuck are we still debating, and why are people who are supposed to be on the left arguing in favor of the right-wing position? It is beyond frustrating. It is infuriating that people who think they're progressive are so easily duped into giving up everything they're supposed to believe in. And this idea that, what's just an imperfect friend? Yeah, that's what Hillary is, a fucking imperfect friend. Somebody who voted for the Patriot Act, who got rid of our constitutional rights. There's no more protection from unreasonable search and seizure. There's no more due process. The government can hold people extrajudicially. If they declare you a terrorist, you have no fucking recourse. She votes for the Patriot Act. She votes for the Iraq War. She's for intervention in Libya and orchestrates it. She was pushing for it in fucking Syria. She was for deregulating Wall Street. She was for outsourcing jobs. If you say that's an imperfect friend, what the fuck is an enemy? I'm supposed to give her credit because she doesn't absolutely despise black people and gay people? Wow, how fucking bold and progressive you are. You don't want to spit in the eyes of minorities. Wow, you're so bold. That's not an imperfect friend. That's a fucking enemy. That's what that is. And the fact that you're unwilling to stand up for what you're supposed to believe in is the fucking problem. People always talk about unity, 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 and then they make the next point, which is what Bill Maher and Fran Lebowitz and Salman Rushdie just did right there. Unity, 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 but give up everything you believe in. No, how about we unify behind the things that we're supposed to believe in, which are immensely immensely popular. And no, the narcissistic one is not Bernie Sanders, who's literally getting people on board for Medicare for All as we speak. He's gotten Democratic senators to agree with Medicare for All to cover everybody for less money and get better outcomes. As Bernie Sanders is pushing policy substance and flipping the Democratic Party and making them better, these guys are calling him a narcissistic old man. And Hillary Clinton goes on a book tour where she's blaming everybody but herself for the loss in the election. Remind me who's narcissistic again. She's narcissistic. She's self-absorbed, which is why she can't shut the fuck up about herself while Bernie's talking about everybody else and making life better for them. I've had enough. I've had enough of corporate Democrats. I've had enough of people standing in the way, blocking the things that we need in this country. We're not taking no for an answer. You're damn fucking right we have a litmus test and a purity test, and that's why we're going to win, because we actually believe in something, and we're going to fight for it. You can get the fuck out of the way. Okay. I'm out of time. See what happens when you're off air for a while? It builds up, it builds up, it builds up, and then you lose it. All right, guys, I love you. We'll be back tomorrow. Same time, same place. You know the deal. I'm out, Keys.